talking to some of the best voices in Nashville. This is One-on-One with Greg Pogue.
Presented by Freeman Webb.
Also brought to you by
Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers, Bass Tire Company, Sam's Sports Place and Sports Grill, Holiday Inn Express Nashville Airport, Valentino's Ristorante, and Sir Speedy of Music City.
One-on-One with Greg Pogue. Broadcasting live from Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Your sports live here on 94.9 The Fan.
And the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Now, here's Greg Pogue.
Well, it is not Greg Pogue. Chase McCabe in for him today as he has some Middle Tennessee State women's basketball duties, but excited to be here at Roy's Meat Service. And it's all presented by Freeman Webb. And my guest today is my good friend Teron Davenport from ESPN. Covers the Titans, the NFL Nation reporter. And we're going to have some fun, talk some shop here for the next hour. What's up, TD?
What's going on, man? Talking shop it is. I feel good, man. How do you feel?
I feel good. I feel good. It's a Saturday morning. Had a little rain. I always sleep better when it rains. So
open the window.
Yeah, a little crack. Yeah, down. Yeah, a little crack.
Especially
in the window.
Got some company. Cuddle up under the cover.
Yeah, you know what's up.
We're going to keep it PG, though.
Yeah, you know what's up. You know what's up. But excited to have you here, and kind of how this show works is it's more about you. I mean, we're not, you know, we'll obviously get into the Titans and what's happening, but how did you get on this journey that eventually led you to ESPN?
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a lot off the air, your dream job.
Yeah, man, I hate it because I always get a little emotional thinking about it. But, you know, basically what happened with me is I always loved football. My earliest memories back in 84, 85, like I was a New York Jets fan. I loved Al Toon. It's funny.
And you grew up in Philly, right?
Mostly in Philly and the Philly area.
Yeah.
But I was born in New York.
Okay.
And I lived there till I was 10. So we're talking 87.
Okay.
86, 87. Moved to the Pennsylvania, Philly, and then I lived around there. But I was a Jets fan, you know.
Oh.
And I loved names. Like, the names stood out to me. Al Toon made me like the Al Toon and the Jets. And Darryl Strawberry made me like the Mets and Doc Gooden and so on and so forth. But just always loved the sport. And then I remember I saw Jerry Rice for the first time, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
San Francisco 49ers, that's my team. And I was a Niners fan. I played ball. I wanted to play pro. You know, it was always something I wanted to do. It didn't work out. And, I mean, I had some workouts, you know, and it's funny, Matt Nagy was almost, like, he and I were almost teammates. He was
really?
Yeah, so I worked out for the New York Dragons, the New York Arena team.
Okay.
And they didn't sign me, whatever, but Matt Nagy was the quarterback,
you know
what I mean, the following year. So, we would have had crossover. And even Saskatchewan Rough Riders, they were interested in me. I worked out for them. And you know who their quarterback was? Mike McCoy.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it's really crazy. But, you know, it didn't work out. I have a marketing degree. I went to school for that, marketing and football, to be honest with you. And one of my teammates, he had a company called 2010 Sports. Originally, it was called Mentor Me, and they did football camps. And I worked with him during the camps. And once it became 2010, we started to work with DeSean Jackson, Marion Barber, a whole lot of Jason Avant. David Akers was actually at one of the camps. Yeah. Franklin resident, right?
Yeah, he was coaching at Ravenwood.
Nice.
I don't know if he still is. But
yeah. That's what's up. So we did the camps, and it's like sitting there talking shop with them, you know, and they're like, damn, yeah, that's a good point. I'm like, hold up. I think I know this game a little bit, you know, and from playing, I was at Cheney University. My offensive coordinator, Lou Orth, who is – like, I love that guy, man. Like, he was at my wedding,
you know,
and I got married back in 01, 02 rather. And I used to sit in his office all the time, you know, and we just watch film.
Yeah.
And just, like, he taught me so much. And I have a really good understanding of especially, like, the old Florida Gators offense, because that's what we ran.
Yeah.
And that's why I love Redale Anthony so much, because, like, I always had to watch his position, you know, the X and then also the A. Position in Steve Spurrier's offense. So I know that offense inside out. I got my knowledge of football from him, and then just talking shop with, like I said, with you know, DeSean and Marion and those guys. You know, Marion, rest in peace. I was just like, I know what I'm talking about. And then around that time, Time Warner, I think it was, they bought Bleacher Report.
Yeah.
And that was back when Bleacher Report was just fans writing.
Right.
And it was like $70 million.
Yeah.
Bleacher Report. I got to figure this out. So I taught myself how to build a website. It was called Press Coverage Sports. And I was writing about the 49ers. And while I was doing the camps, Colin Kaepernick was a guy that I predicted that the 49ers would trade up to pick him. I was able to connect with his agents, and I wanted to do a camp, but we just couldn't – logistically, it wasn't going to work going from Philly to San Francisco.
Right.
So it never happened, but I stayed in contact with them. And social media, the power of social media, and that's why I say, you know, the bloggers and podcasters and stuff like that, I always encourage them to continue to do their thing. Like,
how are you going to get the reps?
How are you going to get reps? Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, I know there was a riff between the so on and so forth. It wasn't really a riff. It was just a misunderstanding. But I support those guys. And they know, because I mean, look at the millions of podcasts that I've been on. You know what I mean? They hit me up, my DMs, I'm on it. You know, but I say all that to say, that's kind of like how I got my start, right? Because on social media, his agents saw the story. I did a story on Colin Kaepernick's first start Thursday night against the Chicago Bears in Chicago. And he balled out. He had a good game. And I did a breakdown and stuff like that. And they saw it. They liked it, sent it to him. He put it on his Facebook. And next thing you know, I'm getting opportunities. And that's kind of how it started.
I was at what would turn out to be his last game. It was the one of the last games at the Georgia Dome.
Mm.
I had always wanted to go to the Georgia Dome. And so my friend and I, we drove down, and it was Falcons 49ers, and the 49ers were off. I can't even remember who started that game. It wasn't Kaepernick.
It was probably Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, it may have been Blaine Gabbert. And then Kaepernick came in like at halftime, and
you
know, they were getting, you know, Matt Ryan was slinging the ball and everything for the Falcons. But I was like, well, I saw him play.
Yeah, so. Hey, listen, he had a tremendous arm, man.
He did.
Like, that dude, he had a rocket attached to his arm. And it ended up that last year, I remember, it was like injuries. He had a severe core injury, and he lost, I think it was like 15 pounds, during the offseason, and it wasn't going to work for him.
Was that Jim Tomsula? His last year?
Jim Tomsula, a.k.a. Mario. He looked like one of the Mario brothers, man.
Yeah.
And that was the year after they fired Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stuff with that. That was a mess, man.
Yeah. So you played, was it Division II, Division III? What?
I was Division I, AA at Delaware State, then transferred to Cheney University, Division II.
Okay.
Cheney is the – they both are HBCUs, but I will probably say Cheney is the original HBCU.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Before TSU, Fisk, all those, Cheney University. It was actually originally a teacher school.
Yeah.
But it branched out to a bunch of other things. And I tell you, interesting story about that university. There's a quad, right? You know, all campuses have a quad. But on the quad – underneath there, the Underground Railroad ran through there.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, and some of the – I wasn't doing it, but some of the guys used to go down, like, because you could go underneath the buildings and like, be in the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
But they said it was haunted, and, like, me and spirits, we don't mix. So I stayed well away from that.
Like, I'm good.
y'all check got that out. Man.
That's really cool. So wide receiver?
Receiver. Yeah, played receiver. That was it. I didn't play anything else, no punt return, no kick return, nothing else. When I was a freshman, transfer, when I first got to Cheney, I did play special teams. You know, I was getting my Bryce Oliver on.
There you go. So have you noticed when you first, like, especially with the receivers, but I would say coaches or any player, when you start talking to them, do they kind of give you the look of like, oh, you're speaking the language. Like, you must have played ball.
Yeah, I give you a good example. The third practice I was here, 2018, Corey Davis. It was when they had it at one of the – actually, I did a live show here, with here meaning the game, with Buck.
Yeah, that's right.
And we did a live show at one of the high schools. But that practice, I remember after practice, I went up to Corey Davis, and I was like, hey, man, did anybody ever tell you, like, you kind of tip your routes a little bit? He was like, what are you talking about? I said, well, when you line up and you have your toe like this and this foot in this position, you're always running out breaking routes. But when it's like this, you're running in breaking. He was like,
how do you see that?
Yeah, I said, man, I just watch you. You see, Corey Davis was a guy, when he was in, I loved Corey Davis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so actually getting to come here and cover him, I was like, that was one of the things, the many things that super excited me. You know what I mean? So I watched Corey x-rayed him. You know what I mean? And I saw that, and he laughed about it, but he was like, you know, you're right.
That's fine. I haven't heard you tell that story. So, I mean, in some ways, some guys probably looked at you as like, all right, you might be seeing some things that could help me.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that because that would be arrogant. I would say we've talked about things. Caleb Farley, another good example. I remember the joint practices with Tampa.
Yep.
Remember that first practice where AB and all that, they were eating the Titans DBs alive, right?
Right.
So I remember coming back that practice here after that. So I talked with Caleb Farley before practice, and I was telling him how I noticed the receivers running slants against him. And I told him, I said, look, Caleb, I watch you, and I know what you like. Like, you want to show that you can run. Like, after you had the injuries and all that stuff, you want to show that you're capable of running. And so when they release like this outside, you're turning, your baseball turning to turn and run with them. But what I saw the Bucks do, they release outside, put that outside foot in, plant it, and then come back this way. And when you, this way meaning inside. So when they're turning inside, your baseball turning away from them. And so now your back is to them, and they're easily catching the slant.
Yeah.
I said, Caleb, you're 6'1". You got long arms. Why not shoot that inside hand on their shoulder to stop them from being able to get inside? And you know you can run with anybody, so just turn and run with them if they don't go inside. But at least you're shooting that inside that hand on the on their shoulder to keep them from crossing your face. And he was like, that's a good point. You know what I mean? So,
Coach,
you
TV.
Know, those are not it's just, man, it, from doing it and just loving it and studying, like, you kind of pick up things.
Yeah.
And that's something that just a tendency he had that I picked up and it ended up working.
I always – now, look, we know he's not necessarily going to ever admit things, but I always felt like Vrabel had an appreciation for you because he knew that you were seeing things through a lens that he saw things through.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, when he was trying to relate something, he knew that of all the people there, you were probably going to understand it more than anybody.
Yeah, no, Vrabel is the most awesome dude. Like, when I had that shortcoming with the DUI and all that, you know, he reached out to me multiple times. You know what I mean? And that stuff means a lot, you know. So, yeah, even just, you know, getting to talk a little shop with him. I used to love where he would have the no cameras.
Mm-hmm.
We just would all come together after his Friday press conference, and we would be able to talk and just talk and shop with him about different things. I remember we talked about Atlanta and their tiered pass rush. It was always cool talking shop. And I remember I asked him the one question about zero splits and switch release, right? And he was like, "What are you, some type of offensive guy? Get out of here." I was cracking up. But, yeah, Vrabel was like next level. He's a wizard when it comes to this stuff.
Well, it seems to be working
where
he is in New England. He's Teron Davenport. We'll have more with him coming up next. It's one-on-one. Chase McCabe in for Greg Pogue today, presented by Freeman Webb, and it's all at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville on 94.9 The Fan. One-on-one with Greg Pogue. Chase McCabe in for Greg today, live at Roy's Meat Service. It's all presented by Freeman Webb. And Teron Davenport, ESPN, Titans NFL Nation reporter, is our guest. So you had your own website.
Mm-hmm.
When did things really kind of start to hit big because you covered the 49ers for a minute, the Ravens were in there.
Yeah. Well, shout out Brandon back in the studio too, man. The Tribe Called Quest Award Tour. I appreciate Brandon for playing the classic.
All right, let me say this because, you know, when you and I did a show called Chasing TD on Friday nights back
Freaky Friday
back in 2019. And I think you realized during that time of like, okay, he kind of has a – he likes good music.
Yeah.
Like, and I love hip-hop. Like, yeah. Like especially 80s, 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, you know. And so we got to the point where we would be playing some deep cut stuff.
Man,
and I just look over and I just see you just like head
bobbing. Yeah,
yeah. Like, and yeah. It kind of was like, this is – we're cruising around on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Got your girl with you, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you got
listen – music, the Lost Boys, they had a song. It's called "Music Makes Me High," and that's the truth. It makes me high. And just like my brother, my big brother, always says, like, music is a time machine.
Yeah.
Like, I listened to that. I just went back to 1989.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's
There's times I will text Teron. I'm like, hey, I'm driving. I want to listen to something. What you got? What you think? And like old Biggie or something like that.
Nah,
so
for sure, man.
So yeah, always got the music when TD is
it's
around.
A must.
So after doing kind of your own thing, is that when the Ravens stuff started? Because that was right before here, right?
Yeah, Philly. The Eagles
Philly,
were before
okay.
here. So basically with that, I did a lot of draft stuff too.
You love the draft.
Yeah. Funny story, the first guy that I stood on 10 toes down on against everybody else was Derek Brooks. Everybody was saying he should be a safety.
Oh.
I said, no, he's a linebacker, and he's going to be a really good one. Turns out I was right.
Yeah,
he's a Hall of Famer.
That one worked out for you.
But just to balance it out, I've been wrong. Sure. I remember calling into Sirius Radio when Jerry Rice used to host the NFL show at night, late hits. And I remember arguing with him, telling him that Anquan Boldin was better than Larry Fitzgerald, and also telling him that Devin Thomas out of Michigan State, D-Mace, if you're listening, you know who I'm talking about, Devin Thomas out of Michigan State. I said, oh, he's going to be better than DeSean Jackson.
Ooh.
All this rain on those two, but basically what happened. So I was after that the Kaepernick after I got the exposure from that Bay Sports Net. Well, no, I'm sorry. I was writing on Fansided,
okay.
And then I did a story on T.O. and he referenced it on the end of when Terrell Davis and those guys had the morning show.
Yeah,
I did a story saying he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he referenced it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because, Fanside has a pretty decent platform, and he saw it. He referenced it when he was on the show. And then Bay Sportsnet reached out to me, and then that was when I was first being credentialed. And one of the things, like, with how I always – my DMs are open, man. Like, I always got podcaster, whoever, will reach out, hey, man, this, and this, and oh, yeah, all right. I'm like that because of Matt Maiocco.
Okay.
Matt Maiocco – he is the premier 49ers beat reporter.
Yeah.
A little uppity now. He works and he's in the studio now instead of at the games. But, that's a different story. so he would always – like, we would meet up the Saturday before games. He would always – his texts were open. His DMs were open. He always helped me. And so when I started to get credentialed, he kind of showed me the way, like, firsthand, And it got to the point, so I was working for a clothing company called Taylor Brands, and they outfitted, back then it was U.S. Airways. So I used to flirt with the flight attendants and get the buddy passes, And so I was paying my way to fly to San Francisco for the games, And then I would stay, and I'll fly back and go right to work Monday morning. Like, I'm catching the red eye Sunday into Monday morning going to work. And I did that for a couple of years, and, like, obviously that – got a little ridiculous. It was ridiculous from the jump. So I said, Philly, Baltimore, I got access to both as far as, like, the commute, know what I mean? I'm going to try Baltimore because Philly's saturated. I should have went to Philly from the jump because I'll tell you about that later. But I reached out to every single outlet in Baltimore, literally every outlet. One replied. It was the Baltimore Times. It's a black newspaper, and I did Raven stuff for them for 2 years. They didn't have me travel or anything like that, but I paid to go to a couple games on my own. And while I was doing that, I connected with Emory Hunt, and we were doing draft stuff. And it's funny because I told Derrick Henry, I said Derrick, I've been arguing about you being a legit running back since 2015, because you were a Heisman candidate, and people say you wouldn't be good in the league. But I covered his Heisman program and all that that year in 2015. So I got with Emory, and then I also was doing draft stuff for a group called Pro Player Insiders. That's how I got Super Bowl access to that Seahawks and Patriots. And I just was, just doing as much as I could. You know what I mean? So while doing that, I crossed paths with a guy named Connor Hughes, who he works for SNY now. He had opened up, but he helped launch about.com, and they did a lot of different team sites and stuff like that. So I was writing on there about the Ravens and doing that stuff. But then USA Today came along. Connor moved on to USA Today with Jets Wire, and he knew my draft stuff. So he was like, hey, I want you to do some draft profiles. So I did that for USA Today. And then eventually they said, well, we're going to launch Eagles Wire in Philly. And I'm like, it's time to go home. You know what I mean? Because I was driving an hour and a half, sometimes 2.5 hours with traffic to Owens Mills, Maryland, from where I was living in Coatesville. Shout out Coatesville, Derek Morgan. You know what I mean? Nice. I was living there. So it was like an hour and a half to 2 hours, sometimes more, to Baltimore, or 30 minutes to Philly. Yeah, we're going to do this 30 minutes to Philly thing. And I'm back home, you know. So I did that for 2 years. But while I was there, Barrett Brooks, my guy, man, former Eagles, Steelers, he won a Super Bowl with the Steelers. He played for the Lions and Giants too. But I went and watched him at training camp in 2016, my first year there at training camp. And, you know, I watched him do the show. And afterwards, you know, we were just talking shop. He was like, hey, man, I want you to meet me tomorrow. We're going to be here. I'm going to shoot you the alley. And I said, well, I'm going to dunk it. You know what I mean? So he had me on the show, and we ripped it. We got into the technique and stuff with O-line. And next thing you know, Comcast Sportsnet, they're like, hey, would you be interested in every Friday coming on with Marshall Harris at 10 o'clock p.m.? Yeah, I'll do it, you know. Sure. And so at that time also, I kind of like shifted. I regressed purposely with Taylor Brand. I regressed, and I was able to work in a location right there in Liberty Place downtown, right? And so I was taking my lunch breaks, running to the Eagles practice. You know, like you'll see this dummy every day at like 11 o'clock running down Market Street to the train station and getting on the train. Go up to Patterson, what they call AT&T station now, and they're running up Patterson Avenue to the Eagles facility. So, you know, I would watch the practice, run back, get on the train. It was like a 10-15 minute ride, write a quick story on there, and then, go back to work, you know, and that's what I was doing every day. And then after work was done, I'll catch the train again, back up there, and do the show with Marshall Harris. So that's how I got my start. And then, you know, that Super Bowl year was crazy, right? And so much exposure. Then Triumph Books, they reached out to me. They're like, would you be interested in writing a book on Carson Wentz? I'm like, yeah, for sure. You know, and they said, well, we need it in 3 weeks. So I'm like, okay. The good thing was I had always did, like, extensive notes on Wentz. So I was able to just refer back. And he was really cool, just talking to me about stuff.
So that was 17?
17, early 17. So I did the book. My daughter, Deja, that's my heart, man, one of my five heartbeats, you know, my four daughters and my granddaughter. She was at Howard University, and she at homecoming, she broke her arm because there was like it wasn't a riot, but it was just like, it was a ruckus. And she broke her arm and got caught in the door. And so I stayed with her, and while I was sitting in the hospital, and the arm is the bone above your elbow. She broke that. So I stayed with her in the hospital she was there for six days. And so I stayed with her, and that's when I wrote most of the book.
Oh, right? Wow.
And I did the book in 12 days. Right. And
that's impressive.
Yeah. It's not a novel. You know what I'm saying? It's more like one of the tabletops with pictures, 8x10. You know, but it was solid, and the book did really well. I call myself Eddie Mush from Bronx Tale sometimes, because that book came out the Wednesday before Carson Wentz tore his knee against the Rams in L.A. So I was like, dang, man, like, I'm bad luck, you know, jokingly. But yeah, that year, man, stuff just blew up, you know, with the Super Bowl and then doing Radio Row. And I remember sitting at a table so many times saying, the Eagles are on winning. I have no doubt about it. And they're like, oh, you're just – I'm not an Eagles fan, by the way. I'm just calling it how I see it. And this is why. And I explained they won, you know. And yeah. So, like, I'll never forget, man. Like, I was leaving Wells Fargo, which is where the NBC Sports Philly – it was Comcast Sports Philly at the time. It was where their studio was. And I remember pulling out, and I turned onto Broad Street, and my phone buzzed, and I look at it, and it's – Heather Burns from ESPN, and she's like, would you be interested in one of our NFL Nation reporter jobs? And I'm like,
yeah.
Darn right. Yeah. You know, and I had offers before. I was married at the time, and like Kansas City Star, you know what I mean? New Orleans Times Picayune, like I had opportunities, but like, we weren't going to do that. You yeah. know what I mean? But the
ESPN.
The four letters call.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a call you got to pick up. So I talked to my wife about it. It was either here or Miami. And we knew Miami wasn't going to work. You know, I didn't want to raise my daughters there. And Cam Wolf, who was here, you know, he was young, up and coming. And Miami was perfect for him. So he went to Miami. I came here. And, you know, my life has changed, you know, for the better. Because, like, I've fallen in love with this. I love this city, man.
Yeah.
I will live here if you know, God willing, I will live here till they mess around. I have to bury me here. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, that's how much I love this city.
Well, and it's crazy to think that it's been 8 years mm-hmm. now since you got here. We'll have more with Teron Davenport here on One-on-One. Chase McCabe in for Greg Pogue today at Roy's Meat Service. And, of course, it's all presented by Freeman Webb on 94.9 The Fan. One-on-One with Greg Pogue. Chase McCabe in for Greg today, presented by Freeman Webb. At Roy's Meat Service, Teron Davenport, ESPN, is with us.
I like that. You mention the song, and then it comes on.
Yeah.
This is L-O-S-T, B-O-Y-Z, Music Makes Me High.
There you go.
Brandon's he's the truth, man. Yeah,
Brandon is on it, that is for sure. So 2018, you come to Nashville.
Yeah.
That is when – so that was that Vrabel's first
year? Yeah, Vrabel's first year.
So you and yep. Vrabel come in together.
And Kenny Vaccaro.
Kenny Vaccaro, that's
a little
right.
bit later after yeah. Cyprian tore his knee.
I remember we were doing the show from training camp.
Mm-hmm.
I was still producing, but I set up the broadcast, and we're doing the show at training camp. And they come out, like, Sip had torn his knee, and then they were like, all right, they're signing Kenny Vaccaro, and we're going, that's like almost an upgrade. No offense to Jonathan Cyprian, but, like,
yes.
the fact that he was just sitting out there. And he comes over and does an interview with us, and I'm looking at – I'm like, this guy's going to be a problem. Like,
Kenny
in a
was
good
a
way.
Man.
Yeah.
You talk about, like, if a Marine were a football player, it'd be yeah. Kenny Vaccaro, man.
Yeah.
Like, the way he played – remember the Patriots game?
Yes.
When he came up, he blasted James White?
Yep.
After seeing that, you're like, oh, they're going to beat the Patriots. Like, it set yeah. a tone, a yeah. different tone. Kenny was – man, he was so fun to watch because he just was, like, all out, man, like that guy. And then, you know, when his elbow got twisted yeah. the way it was, and then he came back soon after that, like, props to Kenny Vaccaro, man.
That whole time period, so you got here in 18, and then the whole switch to Tannehill happens in 19. We were doing Chase and TD at the time. And then I remember sitting with Ryan Porth going, all right, well – they just beat the Patriots, so we probably need to send somebody. And so I get sent to Baltimore. You and I do the show from WBAL
mm-hmm.
on a Friday night in
that
Baltimore.
That was so much fun, man.
And I think we were both kind of like, all right, well, this is fine. I mean, this has been a nice run. Baltimore is the best team in the league. Like,
yeah,
this,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And then just watching that game. And even early on, it was, you know, a little questionable. And then – Dean P starts blitzing the you-know-what out of Baltimore. Lamar yep. looks lost. Derrick Henry takes over. You got that big pass to Khalif Raymond that Tannehill makes. Mm-hmm. Jonnu catches
shot.
One on his butt,
yeah.
you know, for a touch.
No!
Wasn't that from Derrick? Wasn't that the – because Derrick threw a touchdown
was
pass
it
in
Derrick
that
game. I think that was Tannehill.
Okay, maybe.
I almost remember that being on the right hash, and he threw it across the field. I'll double check that. Yeah. But yeah, man, like that was.
I still have the memory of sitting there, and I looked down at where you guys were, all the writers, and you and I kind of look at each other like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They're going to beat the Ravens.
Start looking the book, KC. You know what I mean?
Sure enough, that happens, and I remember going down to the locker room, and Brett Kern and I have talked about this, of Vrabel standing at the locker room.
I remember this.
And he literally shakes everybody's hand.
That was kind of where that started.
Yeah.
To get, like, to catch traction.
Yeah. And, like, yeah. I took pictures. Like, I have pictures of LaWant, and they're all emotional. Like, now, of course, there's a belief in that locker room that they were a good team, and they knew they could come in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just, I think, for everybody, it was just like, did this really just happen?
Yeah.
And I'll also remember when I got done with my stuff. Y'all were still, you know, riding and everything. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna head back to the hotel. And I got turned around walking through the stadium.
Uh-huh.
And I find myself in a stairwell to walk out. I'm walking out with Lamar. I'm like, I haven't told you the story. So I'm literally like, open a door and there's Lamar. And I'm like, I don't know if this is where I'm supposed to be, but I'm just going to act like,
you know.
And it's just him. Or he had just said like bye to a security guard and he's walking out. And like, you can just see that look. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, do I say something? Like, and I just go, hey man, keep your chin up. You're a good player.
Nice.
And he was just like, thanks, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're people.
Yeah.
They're people.
Right.
Was that the one? So you went out the door where you crossed the street and the player's parking lot is there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You ended up going out the right door.
Yeah. Yeah. So I walked out with him. But it was like, I had been around pro athlete. Like, I'd gone through the Preds Stanley Cup run at that point, all that stuff. But to see this guy, kid at this point still, like, it was. If you had just looked at him, you wouldn't have known that it was an NFL game. That was back to when he was a sophomore in high school and got beat in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of that reminder, like you just said, that, oh, they're human.
Yeah.
You know, and because you could see the hurt, like he was hurting.
We forget about that.
Yeah, and because that was his second. I think the first MVP he had won. But
they were 14-2.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and they were
– rolling.
They were a really good team.
And the thing is, too, the significance further about that game, Harbaugh at that time, I think he had only lost like one other primetime game at M&T Bank Stadium over the last 6 years or something crazy like that. Like, that's
–
they went in there.
It was a Saturday night game.
Yeah, they went in there, and that was built to what rhymes with pass, man. Yeah. Like, it was – and even, like, I remember that early fourth down stop, you know – and then the tip pass and Byard had the interception. I want to say that Khalif Raymond turnover was right. It was two plays after Byard's interception.
Yes.
Which is, man, like they executed that game. And I tell you a crazy thing, too. That game, that whiteboard, like I was just doing Whiteboard Wednesday just like on some fun stuff. But that game. I got to do this every week.
Yeah.
Because what ended up happening, so that Thursday after the game, the Thursday practice, Dean Pees is in the locker room. Dean Pees was never in the locker room, right? And so we had just got done the media part of it, and we're walking out, and I see Dean Pees at the door, and I'm like, he said, I got a problem with you. And I was like, what's up, coach? And he was like, you know, my son, he showed me that video that you did. That was basically the same game plan as that we applied to stop Lamar. And that's when he said that, I'm like, yeah, I got to do this every week, man. We got something cooking here. And it was basically just working the scrape exchange concept but then adding Logan Ryan, kind of coming down and playing that nickel position, but playing it at the line of scrimmage. And then what they would do is you had a linebacker, it was Woodyard, who would basically what would happen is he would scrape outside and then the end would crash down and his job was to just blow up the quarterback regardless of whether he handed it off, threw it, or ran it. Your job is to bust him up. And you have two guys outside contained.
Yeah.
And that's why Lamar wasn't able to get loose like that, because that was the thing. All it was, I'm not some type of genius. I just went back and I remembered Kaepernick and the Ravens and how they contained him. And I just said, okay, let's look at this, because Dean Pease was the coordinator for the Ravens. Greg Roman, who was the coordinator for the Ravens at that time, in this game, it was just a role reversal, and I just watched them. It was like, this is how it works.
It worked. Definitely worked. But that was a fun run, and obviously came to an end in Kansas City with the championship game. I'll never forget sitting in the press box in Kansas City, and, it was packed. Mm-hmm. And so not everybody had a seat, and I'm sitting next to Floyd. J-Rob is right in front of us, and I laughed because I'm kind of watching Floyd, and he's like making his notes, and I kind of look down and I see J-Rob, and he's making his notes, and I'm
like in
they're making the same notes, and a bad play would happen, and you just hear and both at the same time, and they're kind of like cussing under their breath, and mm-hmm. So finally at halftime, John's getting up to go wherever, and I go, John, and he like turns around, and I go, Well, I'm watching the same person, and he goes, "Who do you think I learned it from?" And walks off. Floyd just starts laughing.
I miss Floyd, man.
Oh yeah, we all
that
do.
Laugh and just yeah.
That's... It was that trip was hilarious because it was me, Floyd, Jared, and we were supposed to fly from here to Atlanta and directly into Kansas City. There was a snowstorm that had hit. Kansas City.
I remember this.
So all the flights got canceled. We could not, and we're stuck in Atlanta. We had already gotten to Atlanta. So we're sitting there in Atlanta trying to figure out what we're going to do. And they're like, well, we could fly you out like tomorrow night to Kansas City. I'm like, well, we can't do that. We got places we got to be. So what we ended up doing is finding a flight to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Flew into St. Louis. They did their show from one of the stations there in St. Louis. Then my ass had to drive from St. Louis to Kansas City through this snowstorm with
beasted it.
Yeah. In the rental car we got, I got the show that doesn't continue in the back seat or that doesn't stop in the back seat with Jared just going a mile a minute. Floyd sitting there laughing at me, white knuckling it. But we made it. We made it. We got there.
Might have had to get Jared some gummies or something, man. Shut him up.
We'll come back and wrap things up with Teron Davenport from ESPN. Coming up next, it's one-on-one. Chase McCabe in for Greg Pogue today, presented by Freeman Webb at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville on 94.9 The Fan. One-on-one with Greg Pogue. Chase McCabe in for Greg today with Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. It's all presented by Freeman Webb here at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Having some fun going down memory lane today. Mm-hmm. But the Titans now hold the fourth overall pick, and they are currently engaged in a coaching search to bring in the replacement for Brian Callahan and then Mike McCoy. I believe they did give Mike McCoy
the courtesy interview.
Yeah, he was pretty much the one.
Yeah.
Look, for all practical purposes, that dude held something together that
kept the shit from completely going under.
Yeah. I mean, got a couple wins in that. Yeah. And look, I think the team played better.
Got some out of Cam Ward. Established an identity.
Yep. So the next guy can come in here, and who knows? They might want to keep Mike on the staff and in some capacity.
I would.
Yeah. I mean, what would it hurt? And do you have an inkling one way or another who it's going to be?
I don't.
I've always
instinct said,
I've said Nagy.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, just the connections.
Yeah, but I mean, like instinct and background and reporting said John Eric Sullivan. We talked about this, and Borgonzi went in and knocked their socks off, and who knows? Maybe Vance Joseph does that. Who knows? Yeah, 15 candidates, so they're making sure that they're canvassing the group.
I would be interested if, like a lot of people have said, man, Robert Saleh with Mike McDaniel as the OC, that would be awesome.
But there's a lot of talk of Mike McDaniel as the head coach.
Yeah,
sure. So
like he might
see. Wednesday he interviews.
I think some people view he didn't really get a fair deal in Miami, because I think what happened there, they were planning to keep him. you know, obviously new GM's going to decide that, but they were planning to keep him. Then they saw Harbaugh was available and was like, all right, let's see if we can go get Harbaugh.
No, exactly.
I don't see the Titans being in on Harbaugh. I think his demands are going to be too high. You already got a GM. You don't want to give him roster control. Like, we've been through all that here. So, you know, I think Borgonzi knows what he's doing.
Listen, if I was a Titans fan, I would be very comfortable with Borgonzi steering that ship. He knows ball.
So I think they'll be good. I like Matt Nagy. You know, I've talked to people I know in Chicago that don't. I mean, they have a very bad taste in their mouth, you know, from his tenure there. But I think people in Kansas City will tell you that, you know, the last several years back under Andy Reid, working with Patrick, has changed him, has humbled him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now the second
sometimes we need that.
Right. And the second time around, he probably is going to go about things a little differently. Yeah. I think if you look from afar at Vrabel in New England, there's probably some differences. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's still Vrabel, and he always will be. But I've even noticed in some of his press conferences that some of the prickliness that he had, especially towards the end here, is a little more, he's putting a little more thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're winning, so that
right
helps.
He's just says a competitor, he'll be miserable.
Losing. Yeah, like, right.
Yeah.
So, but I will, I think this cycle, obviously there's a lot of jobs open, but I think there's a lot of good talent out there, both as former head coaches and the new guys that are going to get their opportunity
as
well.
You look at Chris Shula, right? You look at who's my man with the – why am I
blanking? Clint Kubiak,
the other defensive candidate.
Oh.
Jeff Hafley.
Hafley, yeah. Yeah. I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, Chris Shula, Jeff Hafley, like they need to send a thank you card to Mike McDonald. You know what I mean? Because he – made the young defensive guy sexy again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they got to pair it with somebody really good offensively. They have to do that. So we'll see.
I still lean towards I'd like to have a former head coach. And that doesn't necessarily mean Harbaugh or McCarthy, you know, that have the rings. But, you know, any of the – like, I think if I'm giving you my true ranking, Saleh would be one. I really like Robert Saleh. There's a lot of Vrabel there, and
very much,
based on Borgonzi's press conference describing what he's looking for in a head coach, it's like, oh, so Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel.
You're looking for that that type of guy.
Yeah.
Not saying that the other guys wouldn't be, but he just seems to fit that mold more. But he's also going to have his choice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, does he – he's familiar.
I think he's with, like, four jobs open to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's familiar with New York. Giants are a better situation than the Jets.
I wouldn't go back up there.
But, yeah, no, I mean, he may not want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Baltimore, I mean, you know, Baltimore makes sense for him because that's the best job. That's the team that you literally can walk in and go win now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know you've said Brian Flores.
Yeah, I would love to see him there.
I feel like Flores and Daboll together could be –
yeah.
Could be something.
That would be, woo. Yeah, Baltimore would be, woo.
You know, and just like Saleh and McDaniel, you know, or if somebody looks at McDaniel and goes, nah, he's still a head coach.
Well, let me ask you that. All right, so let's say Saleh gets the job and he brings McDaniel in. How would you feel about the future? Because obviously you want the success, right?
Yeah.
But if they have success offensively.
He's getting another job.
He's getting another job.
If you give me 2 years that he can work with Cam, I think Cam's got something. I think there's a lot of rawness to his game that, and some hero ball that he needs to, you know, kind of contain a little bit. But the kid's got something. Like he's, you know, everybody's like, why are you running in with RPOs? He gets hurt. I'm like, that was a dude making a play too. You know, so I think if McDaniel had a couple years to work with him, and then gets a job, and you have to do it all over again, then fine. You know?
I'm going to tell you what I would do in that situation. Nate Steelhays, I can't pronounce his name. He's with the Rams. He's one of their – he has one of their lower roles. But he's the guy that draws the plays up now for Sean McVay. If I'm the Titans
and McDaniel comes, I bring him too, but you just got to figure out a role that's a promotion, right?
Yeah.
To allow him to make that move for the Rams.
Maybe.
Quarterbacks, assistant, yeah. You know, something, a pass game coordinator, which I believe he also has that role with the Rams. But I bring him, and he's groomed. Listen, man,
yeah.
We know McDaniel's going. Be you're a sponge.
You're the guy. You're going to be the guy.
You're going to be the guy. Be a sponge because whenever he goes, this is your job.
Yeah. Would you consider, depending on who it is, but keeping Denard?
Yeah. I would like to.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Yeah. I would. If it were me, I would like to.
Yeah, and Bones, too.
Yeah, I mean, Bone, without a doubt.
Yeah. I almost would, if I'm Borgonza, go, hey, by the way, your special teams coach is here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one I'm going to tell you. You bring in anybody else you want. But
the rest is up for conversation, but this we're not going to talk about, okay?
Yeah.
Understand that. But I tell you something sexy about McDaniel, right?
Yeah.
If you hire him as an OC, he gets a head coaching job, guess what? You get a draft pick.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
So
that is true. TD, appreciate it. This
yeah,
fun,
for sure, man. It
yeah.
was really fun. Yeah.
He is Teron Davenport, ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter. You can follow his work there. Chase McCabe in for Greg Pogue today. This has been One-on-One. Presented by Freeman Webb at Roy's Meat Service. We'll talk to you next Saturday morning at 10 on 94.9 The Fan.